Chapter 21 Wonderful Things. Valley of the Kings, Egypt, November 25, 1922. Howard Carter, Lord Carnarvon, and Carnarvon's daughter, Lady Evelyn Herbert, waited in the hot, crowded passageway of the Pharaoh Tutankhamun's tomb. Workers removed the last of the rubble fill in front of a sealed doorway. From another door that bore the king's seal, they already knew that this was Tutankhamun's burial place. Tense with excitement, they sweated in the dense, humid air laden with dust. With trembling hands, Carter made a small hole in the plaster door and pushed an iron bar through. There was a rush of hot air from the space behind. He enlarged the hole and inserted a candle. The others crowding round behind. The candle flame flickered, then settled. "Can you see anything?" asked Carnarvon, impatiently. "Yes, wonderful things," Carter gasped. He enlarged the hole and shone a flashlight into a crowded chamber, open for the first time in 3,000 years. Golden beds, a throne, collapsible chariots, and a jumble of treasures swam before his eyes. After 7 years of fruitless searching, they had found Tutankhamun's undisturbed tomb. The road to the discovery began in 1881 with the sensational find of a cache of royal mummies and their burial goods in a rocky crevice in the hills on the west bank of the river opposite Luxor. By the 1880s, Egypt had become a fashionable winter tourist destination for both wealthy Europeans and travelers passing through the Suez Canal. The tomb robbers of Qarna on the Nile's west bank opposite Luxor were making good money. In 1881, rumors spread of exceptional antiquities for sale, lovely offering jars, magnificent jewels, and fine statuettes. Some of the objects were unique and clearly from royal tombs. Suspicion fell on two locals, Ahmed and Muhammad el-Rasul, known tomb robbers, who smuggled their loot into Luxor in bundles of clothing or baskets. They were arrested and tortured, but to no avail. Until, that is, Ahmed turned against his brother after they quarreled over how to share out the loot. Mohammed confessed and led German-born archaeologist Emil Bruges, a member of the Egyptian Antiquities Service, to a remote crevice on the west bank. Inside lay the mummies of some of Egypt's greatest pharaohs, including Thutmose II, Seti I, and Ramses II. 3,000 years earlier, the cemetery priests in charge of the Valley of the Kings had moved the royal mummies from one hiding place to another in a frantic race against ruthless ancient tomb robbers. They had worked in a hurry, and so the crevice was cluttered with priceless finds, the coffins of queens lying in heaps. Once Bruges had recovered from his shock at the discovery, he employed 300 men to recover 40 pharaohs. Later, some of the mummies were unwrapped, and archaeologists gazed on the faces of some of the ancient world's most powerful men. Seti I, whose tomb Belzoni had discovered, was the best preserved and had a gentle smile on his face. See Chapter 2. The royal mummies caused a sensation. Wealthy tourists flocked to the Nile, dreaming of finding a magnificent gold-laden burial and hoping in vain to excavate in the Valley of the Kings. They spent lavishly on items found in less important tombs. Inevitably, the destruction and looting continued, with many officials looking the other way. Fortunately for science, a few archaeologists, notably Flinders Petrie, trained up some younger excavators. He took young assistants into the field for years, among them a British draftsman, Percy Newberry. During the 1890s, Newberry worked with a gifted artist named Howard Carter, 1874 to 1939. He sent him to work with Petrie to learn excavation methods. Thus, one of the two central characters in the Tutankhamun discovery was on the scene long before 1922. Carter was of humble birth, the son of an artist, but he displayed exceptional talent, which brought him to the attention of William Tisson Amherst, a wealthy Englishman with a large Egyptian collection. In 1891, the Amherst family hired the 17-year-old Carter to draw items in their collection. and later that year, the Egypt Exploration Fund sent him to work as an assistant draftsman to Percy Newberry, who was recording the decorated tombs of nobles at Beni Hassan in Middle Egypt that dated to about 2000 BC. Carter's copies of the Beni Hassan tomb murals were so exceptional that he was sent to work with Petrie at El Armana. The young artist took to excavation like a natural. In 1899, French Egyptologist Gaspard Maspero, director of the Egyptian Antiquities Service, appointed Carter chief inspector of antiquities for Upper Egypt, one of only two such officials in the country. As inspector, Carter was a busy man. Much of his work centered on the Valley of the Kings, where he installed electric lights in some of the tombs. A few wealthy visitors applied for permits to excavate in the valley, but they were turned down on the grounds that they were ill-prepared to search for a tomb. Carter was the archaeologist who judged applicants. The best prepared was Theodore Davis, a rich New York lawyer who received a permit to work in the valley in 1902. Carter had excavated for Davis and helped him reveal the tombs of a noble named Userit and Pharaoh Thutmose IV. Carter recovered part of the pharaoh's chariot and one of his riding gloves. Davis was a rough excavator, but he had the very good sense to employ archaeologists to carry out the excavations. Much of Carter's approach to Tutankhamun stemmed from his experience with Davis. After Carter's brilliant success in the north, in 1904, Maspero transferred the chief inspector to Lower Egypt. There, his work included preserving sites and dealing with sometimes difficult visitors. A stiff man, Carter barely tolerated tourists, and following a violent argument with some drunken French sightseers at Saqqara in 1905, he resigned in disgust. For the next couple of years, he scratched a living as an artist and guide in Luxor. In 1907, at a low point in his career, he met George Edward Stanhope Molyneux Herbert, 5th Earl of Carnarvon, 1866 to 1923. The other principal in the Tutankhamun discovery was now on the stage. In complete contrast to Carter, Lord Carnarvon was a privileged nobleman, an art collector with fine judgment and exquisite taste, and a gambler on racehorses. As a boy, born Lord Porchester, he had been sickly and withdrawn, and was frequently bullied at Eton College in his teens. His education had been disastrous. Perhaps he had learning disabilities. While at Eton, he struck up a lifelong friendship with an Indian Maharaja's son, Victor Duleep Singh, who was a habitual gambler at the races. Lord Porchester went to Oxford and dropped out, considered a military career, and indulged his passions, horse racing, sailing, shooting, and traveling. Meanwhile, he devoured books and educated himself in art and the humanities. In 1890, Lord Porchester became the 5th Earl of Carnarvon and inherited his father's estates. 5 years later, he married aristocrat Almina Womwell, who moved in the highest social circles. Carnarvon's weak lungs made the dry and warm Nile Valley a desirable place for him to spend the winter months. During his regular visits, he developed an interest in ancient art and photography. By 1905, he was bored with the endless round of balls and the usual tourist circuit. His mind turned to archaeology. Carnarvon was one of many wealthy visitors who dabbled in excavation. Archaeology became an entertaining way to pass the time. Thanks to influential contacts, in 1907 he received an excavation permit for an already well-worked area of the Theban Cemetery. He carried out his first 6-week season with no expert assistance, and apparently thoroughly enjoyed it. His only significant finds were a mummified cat and an inscribed plaster-coated tablet. However, once deciphered, the tablet turned out to be a major find. It commemorated the victory of the pharaoh Khemos over the hated Hyksos kings, who had occupied the fertile Nile Delta in about 1640 BC. It is now known as the Carnarvon Tablet. At this point, antiquities director Gaspard Maspero introduced Carnarvon to the unemployed Howard Carter. Carter was becoming increasingly obsessed with the Valley of the Kings, but to dig there required wealth and access to the highest levels of government. While Davis labored in vain in the Valley of the Kings, Carter and Carnarvon became not only friends, but also an efficient team. Carter, with his long experience, was the leader. His standards of excavation were much higher than those of either Davis or Flinders Petrie. Meanwhile, Carnarvon provided the funding and acted as a sounding board. He realized early on, when they were clearing tombs in the well-worked area of the cemetery, that Carter had an exceptional nose for discovery. He continued to make finds even when everyone else thought an area had been exhausted. The two men published a valuable account of 5 years' work as they waited for a chance to excavate in Theodore Davis's patch in the Valley of the Kings. The meticulous Carter made a point of keeping in touch with Davis, although he disapproved of his methods. Unlike Carnarvon, who was almost always on site, Davis was the classic hands-off archaeologist. Rather than excavating, he preferred entertaining guests on his boat, which was moored on the Nile. But he was always present when a tomb was opened, and had been lucky in his assistance, not least Howard Carter. Davis worked fast, with little attention to detail, but he was systematic in his search for tombs. He found several royal tombs, among them that of the 18th dynasty pharaoh Amenhotep II, who died in 1401 BC. The tomb of Yuya, a senior officer of chariotry around 1390 BC, and his wife Tuya, contained a complete chariot, 2 beds, and 3 gold-inlaid armchairs, as well as 3 coffins. Yuya and Tuya's tomb had been robbed, but it was the most complete tomb in the valley until the discovery of Tutankhamun's. Davis had the self-control and resources to dig for season after season, clearing rubble without success. He persisted until 1912, when he withdrew, proclaiming that the valley was exhausted. He had come within 2 meters of the entrance to Tutankhamun's undisturbed sepulcher. The excavation permit for the Valley of the Kings passed to Carnarvon in 1914, just as the First World War broke out. He and Carter started work in 1917. Carter was a different kind of archaeologist from the casual Theodore Davis. He had walked every corner of the valley and was familiar with all the known graves. But one was missing, that of a little-known pharaoh, Tutankhamun, who had died in 1323 BC. Carter was convinced that Tutankhamun's tomb awaited discovery, probably in an area near the well-known sepulchre of Ramses VI. For 7 years, the two men followed Carter's instincts and laboriously cleared rubble from the valley floor, looking for the tomb. In 1922, Carnarvon was on the point of stopping. The hunt was costing him several thousand pounds a year. Carter offered to pay for one more season himself, but Carnarvon reluctantly agreed to support a dig close to workers' huts erected during the digging of Ramses VI's tomb. On November 4, 1922, 4 days into the season, with Carnarvon still in England, the workers uncovered a rock-cut stairway leading to a sealed doorway. Carter waited for 3 weeks until Carnarvon and his daughter, Lady Evelyn Herbert, arrived. Then, on November 24th to 25th, they exposed the doorway, found Tutankhamun's seals on the plaster, and experienced that remarkable moment when Carter probed the barrier and saw wonderful things. Tutankhamun's tomb put a severe strain on Carter and Carnarvon's friendship. Carter insisted that the tomb be accurately and systematically cleared, whereas Carnarvon, a gambler since childhood, wanted to empty the tomb at once. After all the expense, he wanted to sell some objects and display the others. The pressure mounted, and there were violent quarrels, especially after the formal opening of the burial chamber in February 1924. Tragically, a few weeks later, Carnarvon died of an infected mosquito bite, as curiously had Tutankhamun, which put an end to the 14-year partnership. Howard Carter took 8 years to clear Tutankhamun's tomb. He completed the task with the aid of an expert team in 1929. His notes and records were meticulous and are still consulted by experts today. He worked on the clearance during a difficult time, when Egypt was claiming all the finds from the tomb. In 1930, Lady Carnarvon signed over to the Egyptian government all claims to the tomb and its contents. In exchange, she received the cost of the tomb's clearance. Howard Carter was exhausted from the stress and never completed the lavish report he had hoped to write. But his work on the tomb was a triumph, given the facilities available to him. Tutankhamun's tomb was a landmark in archaeological research. The pharaoh's golden mask that rested on his shoulders is an iconic ancient Egyptian artifact that can be seen in the Egyptian Museum. The pharaoh wears a gold and blue headdress with a royal cobra ornament. He stares straight ahead. His carefully woven beard was recently broken off in an accident, but has been restored. We owe the remarkable array of exquisite finds to Carter's skill. Despite his ferocious temper, the tomb clearance was a disciplined team effort. Other scholars now brought serious research to the Nile, among them University of Chicago Egyptologist Henry Breasted, who in 1929 commenced a long-term project of copying inscriptions that continues to this day. Increasingly, Egyptian archaeologists came to assume an active role in excavation, survey, and recording. In Egypt, as in other countries, the more international and professional archaeology became, the more the discoveries, both major and minor, became a matter of national pride. The discovery of the boy king and his treasures opened a new chapter in archaeology, one in which teamwork and slow, painstaking excavation became the norm.